Chapter 31. Intention was to try to induce you to fulfill your promise to Miss Hinton, not solely on her account, and yours though partly. I love Cytherea Gray with all my soul, and I want to see her happy even more than I do you. I did not mean to drag her name into the affair at all, but I am driven to say that she wrote that letter of dismissal to you, for it was a most pronounced dismissal, not on account of your engagement. She is old enough to know that engagements can be broken as easily as they can be made. She wrote it because she loved another man, very suddenly, and not with any idea or hope of marrying him, but nonetheless deeply. Mr. Manston.
Good.
I can't listen to you for an instant, madam. Why, she hadn't seen him. He came here the day before she wrote to you, and I could prove to you, if it were worthwhile, that on that day she went voluntarily to his house, though not artfully or blamably. Stayed for 2 hours playing and singing, that no sooner did she leave him than she went straight home, and wrote the letter saying she should not see you again, entirely because as he had seen him, and fallen desperately in love with him, a perfectly natural thing for a young girl to do, considering that he's the handsomest man in the county. Why else should she not have written to you before? Because she did not know of the connection between me and my cousin until then. I must think she did.
On what ground?
On the strong ground of my having told her so, distinctly, the very first day she came to live with me.
Well, what do you seek to impress upon me after all?
This that the day Miss Gray wrote to me, saying it was better that we should part, coincided with the day as he had seen a certain man, a remarkably handsome and talented man.
Yes, I admit that.
And that it coincided with the hour just subsequent to her seeing him.
Yes, just when as he had seen him.
And been to his house alone with him.
It is nothing.
And stayed there playing and singing with him.
Admit that too.
He said. An accident might have caused it.
And at the same instant that she wrote your dismissal, she wrote a letter referring to a secret appointment with him.
Never, by God, madam. Never.
What do you say, sir?
Never.
She sneered.
There's no accounting for beliefs, and the whole history is a very trivial matter, but I am resolved to prove that a lady's word is truthful, though upon a matter which concerns neither you nor herself. You shall learn that she did write him a letter concerning an assignation, that is, if Mr. Manston still has it, and will be considerate enough to lend it me.
But besides, continued Edward, a married man to do what would cause a young girl to write a note of the kind you mention.
She flushed a little.
That I don't know anything about,
she stammered.
But Cytherea didn't, of course, dream any more than I did, or others in the parish, that he was married.
Of course she didn't.
And I have reason to believe that he told her of the fact directly afterwards, that she might not compromise herself, or allow him to.
It is notorious that he struggled honestly and hard against her attractions, and succeeded in hiding his feelings, if not in quenching them.
We'll hope that he did.
But circumstances are changed now.
Very greatly changed.
He murmured abstractedly.
You must remember,
she added more suasively, that Miss Gray has a perfect right to do what she likes with her own heart, that is to say.
her descent from irritation, was caused by perceiving that Edward's faith was really disturbed by her strong assertions, and it gratified her. Edward's thoughts flew to his father, and the object of his interview with her. Tongue fencing was utterly distasteful to him. "I will not trouble you by remaining longer, madam," he remarked, gloomily. "Our conversation has ended sadly for me."
"Don't think so," she said, "and don't be mistaken. I am older than you are, many years older, and I know many things."
Full of miserable doubt, and bitterly regretting that he had raised his father's expectations by anticipations impossible of fulfillment, Edward slowly went his way into the village, and approached his cousin's house. The farmer was at the door looking eagerly for him. He had been waiting there for more than half an hour. His eye kindled quickly.
"Well, Ted, what does she say?"
He asked, in the intensely sanguine tones which fall sadly upon a listener's ear, because, antecedently, they raise pictures of inevitable disappointment for the speaker, in some direction or another.
"Nothing for us to be alarmed at," said Edward, with a forced cheerfulness.
"But must we rebuild?"
"It seems we must, father."
The old man's eyes swept the horizon, then he turned to go in, without making another observation. All light seemed extinguished in him again. When Edward went in, he found his father with the bureau open, unfolding the leases with a shaking hand, folding them up again without reading them, then putting them in their niche, only to remove them again. Adelaide was in the room. She said thoughtfully to Edward, as she watched the farmer, "I hope it won't kill poor Uncle Edward. What should we do, if anything were to happen to him? He is the only near relative you and I have in the world."
It was perfectly true, and somehow Edward felt more bound up with her after that remark.
She continued, "And he was only saying so hopefully the day before the fire, that he wouldn't for the world let anyone else give me away to you when we are married."
For the first time a conscientious doubt arose in Edward's mind, as to the justice of the course he was pursuing in resolving to refuse the alternative offered by Miss Aldclyffe. Could it be selfishness as well as independence? How much he had thought of his own heart, how little he had thought of his father's peace of mind. The old man did not speak again till supper time, when he began asking his son an endless number of hypothetical questions on what might induce Miss Aldclyffe to listen to kinder terms, speaking of her now not as an unfair woman, but as a lachesis or fate whose course it behoved nobody to condemn. In his earnestness he once turned his eyes on Edward's face. Their expression was woeful. The pupils were dilated and strange in aspect.
"If she will only agree to that,"
he reiterated for the 100th time, increasing the sadness of his listeners. An aristocratic knocking came to the door, and Jane entered with a letter, addressed, "Mr. Edward Springrove Jr. Charles from Knapwater House brought it," she said.
"Miss Aldclyffe's writing," said Mr. Springrove, before Edward had recognized it himself.
"Now 'tis all right. She's going to make an offer. She doesn't want the houses there, not she. They are going to make that the way into the park."
Edward opened the seal and glanced at the inside. He said, with a supreme effort of self-command, "It is only directed by Miss Aldclyffe, and refers to nothing connected with the fire. I wonder at her taking the trouble to send it tonight."
His father looked absently at him, and turned away again. Shortly afterwards they retired for the night. Alone in his bedroom Edward opened, and read what he had not dared to refer to in their presence. The envelope contained another envelope in Cytherea's handwriting, addressed to Manston Esquire, Old Manor House.
apostrophe insight. This was the notice he had written to the steward after her detention in his house by the thunderstorm, Knapwater House, September 20th. I find I cannot meet you at 7 o'clock by the waterfall as I promised. The emotion I felt made me forgetful of realities. See Gray. Apostrophe, Miss Alcliffe had not written a line, and, by the unvarying rule observable, when words are not an absolute necessity, her silence seemed 10 times as convincing as any expression of opinion could have been. He then, step by step, recalled all the conversation on the subject of Cytherea's feelings that had passed between himself and Miss Alcliffe in the afternoon, and by a confusion of thought, natural enough under the trying experience, concluded that because the lady was truthful in her portraiture of effects, she must necessarily be right in her assumption of causes. That is, he was convinced that Cytherea, the hitherto believed faithful Cytherea, had, at any rate, looked with something more than indifference upon the extremely handsome face and form of Manston. Did he blame her, as guilty of the impropriety of allowing herself to love the newcomer in the face of his not being free to return her love? No, never for a moment did he doubt that all had occurred in her old, innocent, impulsive way, that her heart was gone, before she knew it, before she knew anything, beyond his existence, of the man to whom it had flown. Perhaps the very note enclosed to him was the result of first reflection. Manston he would unhesitatingly have called a scoundrel, but for one strikingly redeeming fact. It had been patent to the whole parish, and had come to Edward's own knowledge by that indirect channel, that Manston, as a married man, conscientiously avoided Cytherea after those first few days of his arrival, during which her irresistibly beautiful and fatal glances had rested upon him, his upon her. Taking from his coat a creased and pocket-worn envelope containing Cytherea's letter to himself, Springrove opened it and read it through. He was upbraided there, and he was dismissed. It bore the date of the letter sent to Manston, and by containing within it the phrase, "All the day long I have been thinking," apostrophe afforded justifiable ground for assuming that it was written subsequently to the other, and in Edward's sight far sweeter one, to the steward. But though he accused her of fickleness, he would not doubt the genuineness, in its kind, of her partiality for him at Budmouth. It was a short and shallow feeling, not perfect love. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but it was not flirtation. A feeling had been born in her and had died. It would be well for his peace of mind if his love for her could flit away so softly and leave so few traces behind. Miss Alcliffe had shown herself desperately concerned in the whole matter by the alacrity with which she had obtained the letter from Manston, and her labors to induce himself to marry his cousin. Taken in connection with her apparent interest in, if not love for, Cytherea, her eagerness to, could only be accounted for on the ground that Cytherea indeed loved the steward. 5. December the 4th, Edward passed the night he scarcely knew how, tossing feverishly from side to side, the blood throbbing in his temples, and singing in his ears. Before the day began to break he dressed himself. On going out upon the landing he found his father's bedroom door already open. Edward concluded that the old man had risen softly, as was his wont, and gone out into the fields to start the laborers. But neither of the outer doors was unfastened. He entered the front room, and found it empty. Then, animated by a new idea, he went round to the little back parlor, in which the few wrecks saved from the fire were deposited, and looked in at the door. Here, near the window, the shutters of which had been opened halfway, he saw his father leaning on the bureau, his elbows resting on the flap, his body nearly doubled, his hands clasping his forehead. Beside him were ghostly-looking square folds of parchment, the leases of the houses destroyed. His father looked up when Edward entered, and wearily spoke to the young man as his face came into the faint light. "Edward, why did you get up so early?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, I was uneasy, and could not sleep. ... The farmer turned again to the leases on the bureau, and seemed to become lost in reflection. In a minute or two, without lifting his eyes, he said, "This is more than we can bear, Ted, more than we can bear. Ted, this will kill me. Not the loss, only the sense of my neglect about the insurance and everything. Borrow I never will. 'Tis all misery now. God help us all misery now." Edward did not answer, continuing to look fixedly at the dreary Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.